Did you know that the perfect snack exists that not only has the yum factor, because that's important, but also packs a real protein punch? I'm talking about Wonderful Pistachios, a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Now that's a snack you can feel really good about. It's hard for me to currently pick a fave because they have several flavors to choose from, including no salt and jalapeno lime options. But if I absolutely had to, I'd say I'm in my no shells, Wonderful Pistachios, sea salt and vinegar era. It's the ultimate snacking solution for when you need a quick, convenient, and tasty boost of pistachio goodness straight out of the bag. Whether you enjoy the ritual of cracking open each nut or you lean towards the ease of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has something for everyone. It's time to elevate your snacking game with Wonderful Pistachios. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
I just want to be married. I just want to be married. Why do you want to be married? It's a very easy question, but it's got some really deep implications to it. I think we've been told from a very young age, you're supposed to be married, the white dress, the husband, the wife, whatever it may possibly be. But at the end of the day, we are in relationships.
Hey, hey, welcome to the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. My name is Bree Mitchell. I'm the host of the show, as well as the founder of Brown Girl Self-Care. Brown Girl Self-Care is a platform and space of intentional healing, joy, rest, abundance for Black women. I have the distinct pleasure of being in conversation today with Dr. Chris Marsh. She is a speaker, an author, a sociologist, all the things. And we're going to be talking about her book entitled The Love Jones Cohort, Single and Living Alone in the Black Middle Class. So we're going to be talking about relationships, singlehood, policing Black bodies, Black women, like all the stuff. But before we jump in, say, hey, Dr. Chris, and introduce yourself.
Well, hello. And it's such a pleasure to be on your show, Dr. Mitchell. You're speaking those things that are not as though they may be one day.
Well, take it.
Here, come listen, on. Here, listen, receive it.
I'm taking it.
Such a pleasure to be on the show with you today. When I saw the title of your show, I was like, your podcast, I was like, I am absolutely going to be here. So thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure and truly an honor.
Thank you so much. I'm sure you get asked this a lot. This book, we all know Love Jones, okay? And if you don't know Love Jones, don't make me pull your black card, but The Love Jones Cohort, Single and Living Alone in the Black Middle Class. Why the book? Why do you care, Dr. Chris, about this?
Okay, so we got a lot of ground to cover, but here we go. So for me, and I say in the book that I'm also solace, single and living alone, I was tired of the conversation about why aren't Black women getting married? That's such a deficit kind of conversation. Black women are so much more than just their marital status. Just because they don't have an MRS degree doesn't mean that they don't have, you know what that means. Just because they don't have an MRS degree doesn't mean that they're not a wealth of knowledge. They don't have so many other identities. Mm-hmm. But people often want to just hold Black women down to like whether or not they're partnered or married. So I wanted to write a book where we didn't have a deficit model. We looked at singlehood. I'm a sociologist and a demographer. The numbers are clear. There's some Black women that are simply not going to get married. But what I do want to know is like, what are you doing with your singleness? How are you navigating your singleness? How do you think about self-care as part of your singleness? I'm happy that I wrote this book. And one of my goals is that I really wanted to destigmatize singlehood. You have so many people that are in relationships that are abusive, toxic, unfulfilling, and even oppressive, but they'd rather be in those kind of relationships than to hold the title of single. One of the best compliments I got from the book is people were like, you started a movement where people are really embracing their singlehood. So it was really important that why I wrote this book. It was really important to get Black women in particular to think about all of the texture and nuances that we have. And it's not just about our marital status, and for other people to understand the texture and nuance and complexities that we have. And it's not simply about us not having an MRS degree.
Listen, there are some of us, and I've done this myself especially when I was younger, and I did it because my self-worth was like, you can't see this if you're listening to the podcast, but like if you put your two fingers together all the way touching, like that's how much self-worth and self-acceptance and self-love that I had. So that was my reason. I'm sure every person's different, but just trying to cling on to, for example, in my case, a man, just so I can feel like I'm just not this weirdo, because everyone's supposed to be booed up and partnered up, and if you're not, there's something wrong with you.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the other, and again, I am a sociologist. I am a demographer. I know what the national data looks like. And it was really important for me to do the quantitative work first to really lay out the story quantitatively with like national data sets and then pivot and try to talk to people and put some more texture to those national data sets and all those statistical models that I built. But yeah, I think it's so important that we understand how. If we're not careful, everything is catered to people being partnered and people being married. And I say it in the book, I'm not anti-marriage and I'm definitely not anti-Black love, but I'm not going to just promote marriage for the sake of promote, just blatantly support marriage. Just a blanket statement. Everybody should be married. And I'm not doing that. I also think one of the things that's really important about singlehood and the respondents that I talked to helped me think through this is that we always talk about how we want to be in relationship. We want to be in relationship. I think after reading the book, you have to clarify what kind of relationship you mean because you have these romantic relationships, but we also have these non-romantic, nurturing relationship friends that we need to make sure when we say you want to be in a relationship, you're just discounting all these other relationships you're in. So clarify if you want to be in a romantic relationship. But here's the point. If you want to be in a romantic relationship, I'm a side note, I'm going to tell you a story to get you here.
Yes, okay.
If you want to be in this romantic relationship, I think you have to ask yourself some questions. I'm gonna loosely get to this story, get to this point. I have a friend of mine, and he always says that I just like light-skinned women. He says it all the time. So one time he said it, and so he said, "I just like light-skinned women." And I paused and I said, "No, you don't."
What did
I
you
gave a
say?
long pregnant pause. And the
Yeah.
reason why I gave that long pregnant pause is be long pregnant pause is because I wanted him to understand. I was like, it's not that you just like light-skinned women. You've been conditioned from a very young age that closer to white is right. I
Right.
would respect you if you said that, but you just come to me all the time and say, I just like light-skinned women. By the way, he just got married to a light-skinned woman. I digress. Same
You
thing
did the
about
biggest
being
eye roll, y'all. Sorry.
right. You know, we're gonna talk about colorism on a whole nother show. But
Yes.
and being a colorist. So same thing with marriage and being partnered. Like, I just want to be married. I just want to be married. I just want to be married. Why do you want to be married? It's a very easy question, but it's got some really deep implications to it. I think we've been told from a very young age you're supposed to be married, the white dress, the husband, the wife, whatever it may possibly be. But at the end of the day, we are in relationships. We are in relationships with our parents, with our sisters, with our sorority sisters, with our girlfriends. Why do you always limit it to just being in a romantic relationship? And let me tell you why this is important. Let me tell you why this is important. People are like, well, I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die by myself. The data is pretty clear. Some new data that's coming out suggesting that spouses are leaving their spouse when they get sick because they didn't sign up for that and they don't know how to take care of them. Your friends will show up for you. If
Yes.
my girl, one of my dearest girlfriends, if she hears that I have a tickle in my throat before I hang up the phone, I'll have some ginger ale, some saltine crackers, and some chicken
Yes.
noodle soup at my front door waiting for me. And one of the respondents talked about this and did not make it in the book. She talked about how she can outsource stuff now because there's Uber, there's
Yeah.
Instacart. She talked about how she was sick and she was dating some dude. So he's like, well, cash at me some money.
Come again? What'd you say?
Right. But your girls are gonna take care of you, make sure you're okay. But this brother's like, well, give me some money. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. One of the things that's really important in the book is that I really am trying to have a larger 30,000 foot conversation about singlehood. A lot of times we leave singlehood at the individual level. So there's a whole bunch of Black women saying, woe is me, something's wrong with me. I'm not thin enough. I'm not thick enough. I'm not dark enough. I'm not light enough. I ain't praying enough. I'm not fasting enough. Here's where the sociologist in me kicks in. We have to understand how structural forces constrain our personal choices. If I were to say that again, I'm gonna give you an example.
Yes.
Structural forces constrain personal choices. Now, if I were to say that differently, I would say racism constrains our personal choices. Racism constrains our personal choices. If I was to give you an example, let me give you an example where you can wrap your mind around it. If I, Chris Marsh, want to marry another black heterosexual man with a PhD who owns his own home, makes $250,000, and has estate planning, he's simply not there. It's a structural conversation. And if we're really talking about self-care, it's important we understand some of this stuff was in de was de designed before you even decided whether or not you're going to date or not. You might be single by choice, you're single by circumstance. Understand that your dating pool is constrained before you even decide if you are or are not going to date the pool that's available. But it's unfortunate that we only leave the conversation here and think something's wrong with me. Woe is me. I need to lose some weight. I need to gain some weight. I need to wear my hair natural. I need to stop wearing my hair natural. No, it is a structural. I usually wear my natural, but I'm it's gonna be a very long day. And I wasn't sure what the cotton ball was gonna black cotton ball was gonna do by the end of the day. But it's really important that we understand how structural forces constrain our personal choices. And so that's what I'm really trying to get us to understand in the book as well.
Woof, because woo, I'm single. I'll be 50 next year. Never been married. I have a child. Obviously, I had sex before marriage because there was no marriage. I'm a follower of Christ. I cuss, I do all the things, and I see them eyebrows raising. My point is that when I was younger, I thought, I mean, there was many things I needed to do to be a good, respectable, not only woman, daughter, but a follower or Christian, right? So I was like, I just knew that one day I was gonna get married. And that story that I began to tell myself the more that the years went by was like, God's punishing you. There's something wrong with you. And then obviously all that stuff, you're not cute enough, you're not smart enough, you're too fat, you da-da-da-da-da, like all those things. But that one that I'm not saying that I've got it all figured out completely. I still kind of grapple with that because it's so ingrained in my DNA, right? But that whole you're not Christian enough, that's why you're not married. That's
Right.
why you're single.
Listen,
Yeah,
listen.
we can talk
So
about that.
I am a woman of faith. And
Yes.
one of the things I was really hopeful for was that because my mother's like, I don't care who publishes your book. I don't care what all the titles you get. I want you to be talking in black churches. I want you to be on the black church circuit. And I
Oh.
really thought I was going to be on the black church circuit. Listen. Not
Okay.
one church has called me and had me. Well, part of the reason is I think that I have been quite critical of the Black church in the book
Okay.
and Black institutions. I was like, so all you have for single folks is how to stay single and saved? So the totality of who I am, the range of who I am, is just figuring out how to stay single and saved. The other thing, which does not make it in the book, but this is Chris talking to Bree about this idea. It's really unfortunate. I think churches, I think other Christians have done a disservice to single Black women, because they will have you thinking, oh, you didn't pray hard enough, you didn't fast hard enough, all that fornication you was doing. Well, not okay. I ain't gonna say all that
I was
fornication,
doing, you can say me,
but I
free.
said okay, the premarital sex, that one
Yes.
experience with that premarital sex that we had. I was like, so you want me to believe that the God that I serve is gonna punish me for that one thing that I did or did a couple times, for argument's sake. Okay. But you want me to believe the God that I serve? I was like, I think, Christians do a really poor job of demonstrating the sovereignty, demonstrating the love of God, demonstrating the forgiveness. And here's why I say that, because here's what we don't have. We don't, statistically, I'm talking, this is a statistician to me. We don't have counterfactual data. We don't know if you wouldn't have, if we wouldn't have premarital sex, if we would have been married. We just don't have that data, because I had it. So you don't have that data out there. But
Right.
I think it's so unfortunate. You think like, I should have prayed harder. I should have fasted harder. I shouldn't have been messing around with that little boy in the fifth grade, eighth grade, 12th grade, whatever it may possibly be, and I'd be married now. At the end of the
Nice.
day, is that all I am? Since I don't have an MRS degree, that's the only thing that you want to cater to. That's the only thing that you want to focus on. That's the only thing that's of importance and value to the Black church. I'm generalizing to some Black and some of these singles ministry. And I think that's highly short-sighted of the Black church. It's very short-sighted because they're missing out on a whole structural conversation. They're missing out on an entire structural conversation.
I mean, I can't even believe. Well, I mean, I can believe it, but I can't believe that at minimum they wouldn't want to at least have that conversation. You know what I'm trying to say?
That to me doesn't make sense because that, in my opinion, means that you just think that you are 100% right and there's no room for even just a dialogue or conversation. That's
Right.
number one. And number two, this whole Christianity and marriage thing, let's just say that what they're saying is correct as far as like it's because you had sex before marriage, da, da, da. Like, oh, let's just say that was correct, right? That's why you're not married. My next thought would be, oh, because I'm living in sin, right? That's why I'm not married, because I'm living in sin. But then my thing is, if that's true, okay, are you telling me that married people in the church are not out there doing Lord knows what? Of course they are, because no one is perfect. We hear it
Right.
all the time about pastors doing Lord knows what to their congregants and hustling their money, doing sexual things, like, and not even just the pastor, like anybody in the church, because we're fallible, we're humans. So you're
Right.
telling me that my sin or the things I did in my past are the reason why, but you're still, for example, still doing those things, you're still having affairs and having kids outside of your marriage, you're still lying, you're still cheating, you're still abusing people, you're still abusing your power. Make it make sense.
Right. It's not.
No.
Like, and it's so funny how Christians have a tendency, I'm generalizing, but Christians have it, some Christians have a tendency to have a very short memory.
Oof.
Okay, so
Well, once they're married, well, never mind. Never mind.
okay, right,
Never
perfect.
mind.
So I don't know if black pastors haven't got a hold of the book. They're not interested in having the conversation because I do get hate mail because people read the title and think I'm saying black women don't need no black man. Da, da, da. I was like, you don't read the book. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying, let's talk about how people are living their lives. What are their experiences as single and living alone, as opposed to just making it very reductive to you don't have a husband, you don't have a wife, and therefore you don't matter.
Yeah, because that's how it feels. That's how it
Yeah.
feels. And again, listen,
That's how it felt. We get
that's how it felt. Yes.
like right.
That's
We are
right.
trying to change that narrative.
And I
Absolutely.
love that. Listen, I'm 100% with it because it is so, and I know you know, it is so hard to navigate this life when, first of all, I can't say that I would choose singlehood all the time, because first of all, being single ain't always, just like being married isn't, but being single is not always this bag of Skittles. Like, I'm going through something right now where I'm just like, damn, I wish I had a partner, because, and there's a few reasons why, you know what I mean? But I know
Right.
that there's other ways to have relationship and even to be in relationship with yourself, but to me there's something different when it comes from that significant other, like getting different things from different people in your that you're in relationship with or whatever. That's how I think of it anyway. So it's not like singlehood is easy all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't know.
But
I
you
don't know.
know, it's funny because that's one of the sections in the book I talked about, like, you know, if they were like singles were depressed, if they had anxiety. And so one of the things that the respondents said kind of consistently is that they had like what I termed, I think, situational depression. And so the way they talked about that is that they tend to be depressed for a day or two, but then they get themselves back on track. And this is where friends help them get back on track. So think about it. So think about it as like New Year's Eve. Everybody's supposed to have somebody to kiss, or Valentine's Day, where everybody's supposed to give your loved one something. And so sometimes they'd be like situationally depressed or lonely, but after a couple of days, friends would help them through that and they would go on about their business. And so here's what I think happens sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes people often put all of their emotional eggs like in their relationship, marriage, partner basket, and they have a tendency to forsake their friends. And I think it's really important that we continue to cultivate these non-romantic, nurturing relationships because, again, they'll show up for you when your partner may not show up for you. And the partner may not come. Woman of faith, that's what you want to happen. I'll pray with you. But if the partner doesn't come, you still have friends. And it's important that we cultivate those relationships. Because then, if you are single and you do get married, don't just forsake your friends because they helped you through that singleness too. You still have to have, you know, play dates with your friends. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Both of y'all have your separate play dates and then come back together and play together. But you know, it's really important that we can't put, and it's so baffling to me how like two things. One, marriage is like a panacea. It's like, if I can just get married, all my social ills will go away. I'm like, That's a pie in the sky kind of idea. Let's just think about it from a, because I do a lot of work on wealth. Let's think about it from a wealth or debt perspective. So two people in debt, they get married, that has nothing but double the debt. Y'all, like, that's some issues, right? But it's so funny how people are like, if I could just get married, if I could just get married, all my social ills would go away. I do think, like, because people are so stigmatized, some of the stigma may possibly go away because now you're a partner or now you're married. But we're trying to destigmatize singlehood. The other thing that I think is really important is that we have to understand that even though you may possibly get married, you still want to have your own identity of who you are. You can't have everything wrapped up into that next person because, well, hopefully it'll last forever, but well, nothing lasts forever. Because one of y'all might die before the other one, or something could happen. So it really is important that you continue to think about cultivating other aspects of your life. And it's funny because people are like, well, my partner might get jealous. Like, if your partner's jealous that you're cultivating your whole self,
That's
okay.
not even a red flag. That's a red, I don't even know what's bigger than a flag, but a red, whatever.
But that's kind of the point, though. It's like, okay, maybe a red flag to some people, but it's like, well, I'm in a relationship, so, or I'm partnered, so.
See, I just can't do that anymore. I know that there is, it's because there's still some things within me that I'm still healing. So we have that, and I know that is a part of the limitation. But what's not a limitation, what I know, as Oprah says, what I know for sure, one thing that for damn sure ain't gonna happen anymore is that I just get in a relationship just to have that title. Like, I've gone through too much stuff. I've gone through way too much stuff to ever, ever. And now it's the point, and in your book, did you talk to people to where they went through so much stuff that now they're on the other side of the spectrum to where they're even hesitant at this point because they've gone so long, and I mean, things have been relatively okay. There's been some bumps along the way for sure, but now you're just like, well, damn, does it even matter at this point?
So it's so funny because I'll answer from my perspective than what the respondents say. So it's so funny because, like, I've been on my book tour. The book came out February last year. And so I've been all across the country, in other countries, talking about the book. In fact, I'm going to the UK in a couple of weeks to talk about the book. So really excited about that. Been in South Africa, going to Canada, been to Canada. If it's not, especially when it's non-academic talks, if it's not the first question, it's within the top three questions. Are you in a relationship?
I didn't want to be nosy, so.
I'm like, right. So I was like, hey, and then listen, let me be real clear. Your girl got some suitors out there trying, right? And it's so funny because I tell people, I don't give dating advice. I promise you, I do not. Although I wrote a whole book about singlehood, I don't give dating advice. But if I were to give dating advice, take yourself to the airport. I promise you, every time I go to the airport, I meet somebody. Go to the airport. The airport is a new dating place. I didn't say take a flight nowhere. I said you ain't got a flight. Just get dressed up with some sun luggage, go to the airport, and find yourself somebody at the airport. So when people ask, like, within the first question, the first three questions, are you dating somebody? And I'm like, there's suitors out there. I was like, but what you're not going to do is come up in here and disrupt my peace. You're not, if it's for me, it's got to make sense. And unlike you, I am already 50. I joined the 50 club in August and am loving
Wait.
it. And so what's funny, because I'm going to use profanity for illustration purposes, but one of my dear girlfriends, Jackie Pierce, she said, when you turn 50, you give zero fucks. And I am 50. And let me tell you, there's something so liberating about being turning 50. But anyways, so people ask, and I always tell them, like, you're not going to come in here disrupting my peace. You're absolutely not going to do that.
Yep.
And so for the people that are in relationships, I would just ask you and admonish you to ask the question, are you at peace? If you're not at peace, you don't have to stay in these relationships, especially if they're abusive. Especially if they're toxic, especially if they're unfulfilling and unrewarding. You don't have to be in these relationships. You will still be seen as a whole person, and we will not look at you. People are not going to stigmatize singlehood like they did before. So you have an outlet. You have a whole conversation that will help you get there, but you just don't need to stay in those relationships, especially when they're not proving to be beneficial to you. And if we're really talking about self-care, you've got to take an assessment, an inventory of your relationship, and see if it's giving you or giving you what you want. And your peace has got to be a huge part of that. So yeah, I could be partnered tomorrow if I wanted to, but you're not gonna come up in here disrupting my peace. I'm good. I'm absolutely good. And I think when you stand on that and you're emphatic about that, you stand flat-footed, and very confident, unwavering, I think it even makes you more attractive to men, because they'd be like, oh, really? If I become a challenge now, I'm like, been there, done that, not interested.
See, it's that whole little shift. And they're just like, ooh, I'm going to have to talk to her. Like, I got some sense, because she's just not falling for the okey-doke. Like, it's just not going to happen.
That's a funny thing. One guy that was trying to date me, he was like, you take too much work. I can't bring I got to bring my A game, and I'm not trying to bring my A game. He's like, I can't. I was wow. I was like, that tells me, you know, that whole statement has everything to do with you and nothing to do with me. But let me tell you one thing. President Obama would not be President Obama with Michelle Obama. So I'm Ruth Chris kind of chick, but you go ahead and deal with your McDonald's kind of chick, and I'm good with that. Mm. And he got himself a McDonald's kind of chick, and I'm like, bet.
Yeah, yeah, I know you were just like in your mind, or even to him when he said that, you're like, okay, thank you. Because all you need, now I can just buy. Like,
yeah, I already know. Please understand, if anybody asks, like, what happened to you? I'm going to tell them, because this is all about you and your insecurities. So it's like,
Yeah, for sure. What have you noticed or learned in regards to singlehood in Black women, since I'm a Black woman and you're a Black woman, or just singlehood for Black people in general, in the, let's say, even like 75 years ago, 100 years ago, in relation to now? Because I feel like we all have that family member, like our great grandmama and them, or whoever, where you knew that they was married to great granddaddy, he was beating her, but they stayed together because being single, heaven forbid, probably was like a death sentence in back then with everything that was going on, versus now, just like, oh, I'm single, I don't feel great about it all the time, but I don't give a damn. You know what I mean? Like that kind of mentality.
Yes. Like, right. No, that's a great question. Yes. A lot of people in the book, they were like, if it happens, great, but I'm not going to settle.
I know you love this podcast, but if you've been on the hunt for other unapologetically Black podcasts to listen to, I want to invite you to give Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR a listen. They featured an episode of It's Been a Minute, and it was with Tracy Ellis Ross, and it was like a breath of fresh air for me. She touched upon her work, which of course includes Girlfriends, and we know the legacy of that show, and also how that dynamic specifically between Joan and Tony still has a huge impact on Black culture. But it gave me room to reflect not only about the ways I am in community with Black women, but also how I am being in relationship with myself. NPR's episodes, they just hit differently. So NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience, from the It's Been a Minute episode with Tracy Ellis Ross to the Code Switch episode on the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott. These episodes are rooted in our richness and our history that we will not allow to be erased or marginalized. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. There is no shame in needing to rebuild. So I'm in a season of taking back my financial power, and that looks like getting my credit together, because having credit is powerful. I'll be making a move next year to another state, and I'm doing what I know to do now so that my credit won't prevent me from being able to rent another home. If you're in a similar situation, one tool I want you to know about is Kickoff, the credit builder that requires no credit check and is super simple to get started with today. Kickoff is a credit line that is just for credit building, not everyday spending, and there are zero catches. You make on-time payments, the credit bureau sees your good behavior, and your credit grows. Sign up in minutes from your phone and start building credit right away. Join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar at getkickoff.com/selfcare today. That's Kickoff without the C. GetKIKOFF.com/selfcare. Special offer applies to new Kickoff premium customers for their first month only. Subject to approval and only available on getkickoff.com/selfcare. Terms of offer are subject to change. Hair care is not one size fits all. At the beginning of my natural journey back in the 2000s, I remember feeling so frustrated because at the time, there weren't many brands even acknowledging type 4 hair. So you had to search high and low for products that even worked. Having a great hair day is possible thanks to Way. My hair is dense with fine strands and it's super kinky, coily, and dry. Found out that part of the dryness was because my conditioner had to fight its way through buildup and hard water. If this sounds like you,
You have got to add Waze Detox Shampoo to your rotation. It brought my hair back to life, and now it's forever a must-have. Another must-have for me is Waze Hair Oil. So once my wash and go is dry, I love to fluff and scrunch with Waze Hair Oil, and it makes it feel softer and healthier. You want more volume? Waze has a shampoo and conditioner for that. More moisture? They got a shampoo and conditioner for that too. Spend less time guessing and more time rocking a great hair day with Waze Hair Care. Wash your way to healthier hair with shampoos and conditioners made just for you. Go to theouai.com and use code SELFCARE for 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code SELFCARE.
And one of the things that I talk to both men and women who are single. And so, and I, as a sociologist and a scholar, I never know what to make sense of this. A lot of the men in the book said one day they'll get married. And a lot of the women were hopeful that they would get married. Mm-hmm. And so we're having all these conversations about women and their preferences and who they're dating and who they're, Black women in particular, who they're dating, who they're not dating. I think we need to turn, if we're going to turn the spotlight on somebody, we need to turn a spotlight on men and how they're choosing to pick who they're choosing to marry. So, but that's it. So some of them are like, you know, I'm not going to get married. Related to that, and I'm going to get back to the second question you asked, but related to that, I also think what's really important too is that, and I say this all the time, stop policing Black women. Let us date whoever we want to date. Mm. You tell us how loud we should be, how loud we shouldn't be, how big our butt should be, how big our butt shouldn't be, how nappy our, how textured our hair can be. I say nappy, but I'm owning
it. Nope, nappy, kinky. Yep.
How natural our hair can be, or how natural it can't be. Stop policing Black women. Let us be. And it's funny, I'm saying this because there was something that they wanted me to engage in this conversation, and I would not. There was some woman a couple of months ago, might even been years now, they asked her, would she date a bus driver? And she said, no, but I'll date the person who owns a fleet of bus drivers. Mm-hmm. And so because I do work on singlehood, blah, 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 they asked me to comment. And I was like, I'm not going to comment, because at the end of the day, I don't care if she dates the bus driver or the man who has the fleet of bus drivers. Let Black women be. Mm-hmm. Again, if you understand how structural forces have constrained our personal choices, we are making adaptations. We're adapting to the environment, which dovetails into your second question about like this whole idea of like singlehood and how people are actually kind of thinking about singlehood. And for this, it's really, I think what's most important when we think about singlehood and how people are thinking about their singlehood, it's important that we understand that, again, friends play a central role. One of the things that I'm really clear about in the book is that singlehood's on the rise. It's on the rise in the U.S. and it's actually on the rise globally. And whether or not, and one, I say this in the book, I was like, I'm going to give Black women their flowers, because Black women have shown the world, the globe, how to do singlehood and how to do singlehood effectively. Again, whether or not it's an adaptation mm-hmm. or not, it is really important that we understand that the Black women have really been leading this charge and leading this conversation. And there's a lot of scholarship that's coming out. And it's really, and this is what's really kind of important about singlehood for me and the work that I do, is that there's a lot of scholarship that's coming out about singlehood, but it tends to have a white face. I think about like single parenthood, how it was pathologized when it looked like me and you. Mm-hmm. Then yep. You had Murphy Brown. Mm-hmm. The sitcom come out, and she was she became a single mother, and then it was hot. It was the in vogue. It was the sexy thing to do. But when it looked like you and me, it was a pathologized. And what I'm not getting ready to do is let scholars take singlehood and be like, oh, so now we have people that don't look like us that are single. It's on the rise. Let's talk about their. I'm like, wait a minute. What you're not going to do mm-hmm. is discount Black women in this entire conversation, because we are the substratum. Mm-hmm. We are the foundation. We are the pioneers, the trailblazers of this broader conversation. So it's very important. In this whole entire conversation about singlehood, we have to understand that Black women, whether or not it's by choice or by force or an adaptation, we are showing everybody how to do singlehood and how to do it effectively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to get to the cover of the book.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. So three things I think that'll get me to the cover. You know, I got to take the long route to get there. First, the book is written from a non-academic perspective. The introduction and chapter one are very theoretically dense, but chapters two through 10 are much more accessible.
Okay.
And the reason why I did, I try to start the book at chapter two, and Cambridge, it is published by Cambridge University Press, which is a top academic press. They were like, we are Cambridge. You need a theoretical chapter. But I was like, I don't want to write this book to my colleagues, because if I write the book to my colleagues, then I've disenfranchised an entire group of people. And what I said is that I want Pookie and them to be on the corner reading
Not
my book.
Everybody
got a cousin Pookie. So cousin Pookie can start at chapter two through 10, because chapter introduction, chapter one are kind of theoretically dense. But one of the things I said in the book is that this is a politics of citation. I am citing Black scholars that talk about Black families. Mm-hmm. There are a slew of scholars who do not look like me nor you, who have spent their entire career and have become the expert on Black family. And I was not citing them in my book. There are Black scholars that are making the exact same argument, but because we're in the environment or in the culture, we're not as objective. Mm-hmm. But this person who's not in the culture comes into the culture and they're more objective and they become the expert, not on my watch. This book is a politics of citation, and I'm citing Black people that are talking about Black scholars. I'm talking about Black families. One of the other things that was really important to me, I look at avenues into the Black middle class or consequences of being in the Black middle class, because mm-hmm. I decided early on in my academic career, I was not going to pimp the poor to make my academic career. There are people that do not look like me and you, and only talk about poor Black America. There is a Black middle class in spite of, and I want to make sure that I bring their conversation to the table. So notice the subtitle, Single and Living Alone in the Black Middle Class, because there is a Black middle class in spite of all the isms that they have to deal with. So it was really important that Pookie and them could read the book. It's really important that I focus on the Black middle class. I wrote the book that I absolutely wanted to write. Mm-hmm. I do tell people, if this would have been pre-George Floyd, it would have been a very different book. I'm so happy that I wrote post-George Floyd. With that being said, I want on the cover, I wanted to have like a single person at a coffee shop, and then a single person shopping, then a single person carrying a dog, and a single person doing yoga. So mm-hmm. Cambridge sent me like an open source link, and I got a chance to look at all the pictures to put on the book. And so I saw one where you had these beautiful Black women, really thick, beautiful lips, hips behind, and, you know, real big earrings, big afros and everything else. So I said, but you know what? I've got to do my due diligence. Mm-hmm. I looked at all of the illustrators and none of the illustrators were Black. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I absolutely cannot do it. So the African American Museum has an open source of pictures you can use. And it's actually a quilt. There's a young Black woman who was in Anacostia. She would bring Black and brown children to her house in Anacostia and teach them how to quilt.
And
I was like, that's going to be the cover of my book. But also, I think what's really important about the quilt, it looks like a stained glass window is what it looks like.
Yeah.
But it's kind of gets that to that notion of like networks and friends and how friends play a central role to the conversation. So I am so happy that I settled on this cover. So in every space I go, I try to explain what the cover actually means, because it really does mean something to me. And I was very thoughtful in what I did for my cover.
I was going to say, you guys were not privy to the very small conversation that we had before we recorded. When I tell you that Dr. Chris is like everything Black. Okay. When we first started, she wanted to make sure that she had a certain image in the frame while on Zoom, but it just didn't work out. But that was by a Black artist,
yes.
Right? So she was telling me about that, and it's beautiful, by the way. And then you just held up a shoe. Now, whose shoe was that?
This is Allison Felix's shoe. And
okay,
let me tell you, Allison Felix was a runner for the U.S. team. She was a sprinter. I think she was just a star. I think she's the most decorated track Olympian. She actually went to the University of Southern California. She is a Black woman. So when she found out she was pregnant, she was training in the dark. She was training early in the morning. She actually gave birth to her child early because she was so afraid to tell Nike and her endorsers that she was pregnant, because she wasn't sure what the fallout was going to be. When she told Nike she was pregnant, they decreased her contract by 70%.
Wait, wasn't this recent, like in the last few years?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Allison Felix dropped Nike and started her own shoe line. You will not see me in another pair of Nike. The story gets great, though. The story ends well, because Allison Felix just gave birth to a baby boy, I believe, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, just recently, sometime in April or March,
March or April.
Yes. So she just gave birth. And it was so funny to watch her on social media because she was, and she even kind of said how like she was really able to like bannerize this pregnancy because the other one she felt really bad because and her daughter that she gave birth to was able to celebrate in this pregnancy too. And she was like, I'm so happy to be able to celebrate because I was living in silence and I was hiding my pregnancy the first time out. So she dropped Nike, made her own shoe line, the first Black woman to own her own shoe. If I'm gonna wear a pair of sneakers, I got them in every single color. They're a great walking shoe. SAYSH. Yes.
SAYSH is the name of the
Yes.
brand.
She
Maybe.
also just made a shirt. It said, if I can find it. She also, oh, here we go. She also just made a shirt and it said,
Ooh, pay me like a white man, okay?
like a white
It should
man.
say a mediocre white man, because.
Me, my love, let me tell you, I get looks every time I'm in the airport. It's so funny because Black women and I have a full conversation without saying a word to each other. And they just look and I just look and I'm like, a full on conversation. Remember you talking about the 100 years ago? That go back 100 years into our ancestors and everything, a full conversation. And it's funny because my limited observation, what I've noticed when I wear the shirt, and there's white men that'll come up to me and they'll be like, yep, they'll be like I get it, I get it. But the only people that seem to give me a little bit of hesitation are white women.
Really? And
When I
what
wear
do
the
they, what's the pushback with them?
I
Like, what's
don't
their,
know.
what, not that it's their business anyway, but what's the feedback?
Right. So I don't know. They don't say much. They just kind of They're the only ones that like don't engage. And I'm just
You know
like,
what?
in my selective observation.
Don't even
But
get me started.
Allison Felix, I think that she's fantastic. I was like, yeah, I appreciate, I think I'm all about Black. I am all about Black. I absolutely am. Here's the reason why first of all, I'm not explaining. I am unapologetic about not me supporting Blackness. But what I
Come
will say is that everything you want, you can find Black.
Yes.
Period, full stop. I don't know if I could have said that 20, 30 years ago, but everything you want now, you can find Black. And we're like, oh, I'm just gonna go buy the Nikes. I'm not, you will. Now, one of my students bought me a Nike hat. When I go golfing, I will sometimes wear that. So if you ever go to my social media, you see a Nike, it's because my
Of
student bought it. I want to make sure I support my, I'm not wearing, I'm not
course.
supporting Nike. I'm absolutely not supporting Nike. And as a Black woman who has a shoe line, yeah, Everything you want, you can buy Black. You can absolutely buy Black. And I am committed to that.
I need that shirt.
It's funny because like I think of it as a sociologist. So one of the things we know is this whole gender wage gap, right? And so
Yes.
like there's a gender wage gap. It's stubborn, it's not going anywhere. If you think of just men to women make about 70 cents on the dollar. Sometimes it's 68, 69 cents, sometimes as high as 73 cents. But it's on average, just women make less than men. Now, in the book, something else about the book is the footnotes. But in the book, I'll get back to that. In the book, I talk about equal pay day. So if we just look at it, just equal pay day, women to men, and I actually put it in the book in a footnote. If we look at just men to women, I think like women would have to work until March of, I think it was 2021 and 2020 in the book. I can't remember. Women would have to work until March of the next year to make what the average white man made the year before. That's without taking race into consideration. But now when you start talking about Black women, Black women have to work until September 20th or 21st of 2021 to make what the average white man made in 2020. I calculated it in the book. It's like 265 days. So if you're offended by my sweatshirt when I wear it through the airport, but you're not offended by the gender wage gap that is stubborn, persistent, and is not going anywhere, or you're not offended by equal pay day, you need to be looking at yourself. And not looking at my sweatshirt.
Yeah, that's not a you thing.
I said, I said what I said. It's tight, but it's right.
Yeah, that's a them
Evelyn,
thing.
yeah, that's the them thing. Like you're offended by my sweatshirt. I actually went, a Black woman had a sweatshirt and it said, I bought one, the first one. It says something like, please don't be fooled by these degrees. But then she had another one, Black woman. It said, and she's on my Instagram. I think it's, I can't think of the name of the company. I think it's Incense. She said, and let me make sure I get this right. They stole more than we could ever lose. And I walked through the airport with that shirt on and some shoes that a Black woman designed. Do you know how with my natural hair, do you know
Ooh.
how powerful that is? Swear to you, every time I put on my shoes, I stand so confidently as a Black woman. every time I put my shoes on. And then please understand, I've got Gucci's, Ferragamo's, Christian Louboutin, all that in my closet. But the shoes that make me feel so black and so beautiful and so feminine happen to be my Felix. And I have them in every single color.
Oh my gosh, I need some. Look, I don't have any of those shoes that you named, but
That's a whole middle class thing, you know, that part. So my self-care, I have my mental health Mondays, but your girl takes care of herself every single day. So I have my mental health Mondays. I do all of the stuff that I want to do and none of the stuff that I have to do. And I've trained, I draw my boundaries. And so in fact, my students will like text me, like, Dr. Marsh, on Tuesday, when you read this text, bet, you know I'm not
I already
reading it
know.
on Monday. And I believe that being a professor, I am in a leadership position and I want students to think about their self-care. Maybe you can't have an entire Monday, but have like 2 hours where you decompress and do something completely and totally for you. So I do all the stuff that I want to do and none of the stuff that I have to do. And it's so funny because everything that I have to do is still there on Tuesday. The world
Oh
didn't
God.
stop. The world
Still
didn't
didn't.
burn down, and it is still there on Tuesday. So I'm like, bet I'm going to do what I want to do on my mental health Monday. So that's how, and I'm very committed to my mental health Mondays. 9 out of 10 times, you're gonna find me on the golf course because I absolutely love to
I
golf.
love that.
I love to golf. I never thought that I would be a good golfer. I love it, and I'm great at it.
Come
So,
on.
but then every other day, you know, I really do. I'm unapologetically black. And I stand confidently in my womanhood and in my blackness because you can't disconnect one from the other. I'm not black. I'm not a woman. I am a black woman. And you have to have that. In the book, I talk about how it's not that I'm a black woman, but I'm a single black woman because there's a lot of implications in all of that. And so I want to make sure that besides the Monday, I take care of myself every single day. So when I bet on black, as Issa Rae would say, where I bet on everything black, or I'm betting for everything black, yeah, that absolutely is really, really, really important to me. And it gives me the energy and it gives me the drive to do the work that I do. Okay, so we'll get back to the book real quick. The one I want to talk about the
Yes.
book. Okay, so one of the things my editor said, and you know, I have an editor. I don't want people to think I sat down and just wrote this thing. Most of us have editors. Academics don't talk about their editors. I have no problems talking about, 'cause I was like, not my ideas get a little jumbled up here sometimes. I
I was
have
gonna
an
say,
editor.
I want to cut you off for a second. I think I know, but you can educate me and us. What is an editor specifically? Like, what does an editor do?
Listen, I got an editor for everything. I got a content editor. I have an outline editor. I have line edits. So there's one that can help you with the overall structure of like your argument and like the book. That's like 30,000 feet. And then you can say you have someone that does more of like line edits. It's like, okay, you didn't conjugate your verbs here or there. I got a black woman. I got a white man who's in the UK. I got editors all over the place to help my thoughts, you know, become very clear. And we can use editors. It's okay. People don't say it out loud. I'm saying it out loud. Get yourself
Thank
an
you.
editor. Whatever you, if you need one, call me. I got some editors for you. Great ones, like a black one that you could draw from. So my editor said, Dr. Marsh, you tend to go off on a tangent. Can you believe that?
No, I cannot.
Right.
Rude.
So he's like, in your writing, you tend to go off on a tangent. Stay focused on like the idea and anything that's tangential to the story, put it in a footnote, but try to keep your footnotes to a bare minimum. So I was
Oh
like,
boy.
okay. Y'all want to guess how many footnotes I got? I got 122 footnotes in the
That's
book.
all?
I only had 122 tangents I wanted to go off on. I said, you have to get the book. I read the footnotes. You're gonna miss out on some really interesting golden nuggets kind of idea in the footnote. I talked about Venus Hottentot. People don't know about Venus Hottentot, but Venus Hottentot was a woman from South Africa, and they put her, she had over-exaggerated genitalia, and they put her in a circus, and she actually died early and died young. And so those are the kind of things that don't necessarily relate to singlehood, but are central to me being able to educate the audience who may not necessarily pick up an academic book. I want to make sure that you walk away learning something about just general information. And so the footnotes are really, they're my love letter to the reader. The book is a love letter to those that are single and living alone, but the footnotes really are a love letter to the reader, just giving you some information and tidbits of stuff that you may or may not necessarily know.
So the reader has your book, they finish the book. What do you hope they take away from it.
After reading this book, I hope you're just as likely to ask somebody, why are you married? As we are to ask somebody, why are you single? If we continue to ask single folks, but we don't ask married folks, we're privileging marriage. I didn't say good marriages. I didn't say healthy marriages. We're simply privileging marriage. I'm of the mindset we need to stop asking everybody about our marital status or our dating status or our partner status. But if we are, let's ask everybody. If we're only asking singles, we continue to promote that deficit model. Gosh,
so true.
The other thing, now now this is the sociologist in me, so go with me for a second. Earlier in the conversation, we were talking about how structural forces constrain personal choices. Structural forces constrain personal choices. Racism constrains my personal choices. One of the arguments I'm making in the book, and hear me, listen, if you buy my argument about structural forces, I am arguing that we need to redefine family. Why can't a person who's single and living alone be considered a family of one? Hmm. Let me tell you why that's important to me. If we think about the Census Bureau's definition of a family is someone that you're related to by blood, marriage, or adoption. If you're single, living alone, don't have any children, never been married, you would not show up in the data, census data, as a family. You would show up as a household, but not a family. There are advantages to being labeled as a family. Three quick ones and I'm done. And one's benign. So I want to get the discount on my one phone. Yes, I got the book cover of my book on my phone. Yes, I do.
But hey,
I want a discount on my phone. I want the family plan discount. I want a discount on my one phone. Number two, going on vacation. Single occupancy is more expensive than double occupancy. So you're discriminating against people in plain sight. And here's where I think everybody that's listening to this will nod their heads to this one. There can be a singlehood penalty built into the tax structure.
Oh.
See, everybody's nodding their head. They're like, what?
Listen, you are going to. You
Listen.
I know I'm going to let you finish your thought, but
let me tell you something. There's a singlehood penalty that's built into this tax structure. There is a beautiful book by Dorothy Brown. It's called The Whiteness of Wealth. And one of the arguments that comes out of the legal tradition, one of the arguments that Dorothy Brown makes is that we should all file our taxes as single. Even if we're married, we should file them as single. And I'm of the mindset that yes, we should all file as single. If we're not going to all file as single, I want to file as the Chris Marsh family. And I want to get the advantages of the Chris Marsh family. So I am implicating all of these institutions that are openly discriminating in plain sight. Again, this is if you buy my argument that structural forces have constrained my personal choices and I'm not even able to develop a family. And then I got to pay a different tax structure because I'm not in a family. That's insidious and that's discrimination in plain sight. And that's what I want you to think about, whether or not we should change the term family or give people that are single the same advantages as families have. The other argument that I make in the book is that if you're not going to buy my argument about a family of one, I do think that we should kind of establish these augmented families. These are families that may or may not be blood ties, but like your dearest girlfriend, you all should be able to be identified as a family and get that break together as a family. Because sometimes you have these girlfriends that are closer than these romantic partners, these non-romantic nurturing relationships. We should be able to be identified as an augmented family. So for example, if I have my goddaughter and I'm paying for half of her tuition or a good portion of her tuition and her mother's single, why can we not be identified as a family so I can get some tax break on the tuition I'm paying for?
Yes.
Yeah. So those are some of the implications. The last chapter of the book really talks about, the last two chapters talks about the implications of singlehood and what it actually means on a larger scale. Please do pick up the book, The Love Jones Cohort. The subtitle is Single and Living Alone in the Black Middle Class. You have to buy the book to figure out why I came up with the title. My preference would be that you buy it at an independent Black-owned bookstore. Most books, Black independent bookstores have it, or they can order it and you can get it from there. If you're in the DC area, you can get it from Esalen Books, Kofa Books. If you're in the LA area, it is at Malik's Books.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. And where can we find you online? Where can we link up? Where can we find you? See you in that Nike cap on the golf course.
You're like, right. So all of my social media, as well as my website, is Dr. Chris Marsh. That's DrKrisMarsh. And for the website, that's drchrismarsh.com. Please do follow me. Please read the book. Let me know what you think about it. Let's continue the conversation.
And she mentioned The Whiteness of Wealth. If you're interested to go further, get that book as well, because I want to read that as well. So those books are on my list. Thank you very much for the resources.
Yes.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for being a guest, for being not only a breath of fresh air, obviously, but just making this topic that can be so judgy and you can shame people, making it so open and relatable and real mm-hmm. and digestible. That's what yeah. we need, right?
Yeah.
So I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for having me on the show. It really is a pleasure to be here. I'm so glad that we were connected.
Me too. And if you're in LA, I don't golf, but I'm just saying.
Like, we could definitely go and get some tacos. Taco Tuesday at the District. Girl, I'm a black owned spot right there on Crenshaw 39.
Listen, Mexican food's my favorite, so don't threaten me with a good time.
Like, deal. We're considering it done. It'll happen.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. I want to thank my special guest, Dr. Chris Marsh. Get her book. Hit her up on social media. Don't feel like singlehood is a dirty word, because it is not. That's all for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week on the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast.